Today's shiur has been dedicated by Dr. Robert Libman, Le'ilei Nishmas, his mother Henke Bat Natan. The schus of Torah learning from this shiur should provide a continuous aliyah to the neshama and should provide bracha to the entire Libman family. And we are up to Tes Vav Amid Aleph, seven lines down, the second word on the line by the two dots where it says, My Taima. Yesterday we learned the Mishnah that taught us about a couple of rabbinic decrees related to the sale of animals to idolaters. The Mishnah opened by saying that with regards to the sale of smaller animals like sheep and goats to idolaters, animals that are not, you know, beasts of labor, the matter depends on local custom. That is, where there's a local custom to not sell smaller animals to idolaters, then in that place a person must abide by the custom and not sell small animals to idolaters. Because of the concern that it's placing a stumbling block before the idolater who would engage in the sin of bestiality. The Mishnah said in other places the custom was not to be stringent about this. For those places relied on the assumption that since this idolatrous buyer is becoming the owner of the animal, he's not going to want to injure his own property by consorting with his animal. Then the Mishnah said, regarding larger animals, like beasts of labor, the halacha is that you may not sell larger animals to idolaters in all places. So the Daf today begins by discussing the reason for this last halacha. The Gemara asks, my time, what's the reason that by the larger animals it's forbidden everywhere to sell them to idolaters? The Gemara explains the reason is, Nehi deliver via alochai shinan. Granted that you have places that rely on the assumption that in terms of the problem of making a stumbling block, that the idolater might commit bestiality with the animal. Granted that in, you know, certain places we're not concerned about that. However, mevid be malacha cheshinan. There's a whole separate concern here by beasts of labor, these larger animals, an ox or horse, which is that it's quite likely that this idolater, a non-Jew, will use the animal for labor on Shabbos. And we know the Torah says an animal that belongs to a Jew must not be forced to do labor on Shabbos. You can't have it do any act that's considered a malacha, it's considered creative labor on Shabbos, for example, plowing. But the Gemara wonders, v'nevid, why not allow the idolater to have the animal do work for him on Shabbos, kivin dezavna kanya? For of course, once he has purchased the animal, it belongs to him. And the idolater is free to do whatever he wants with the animal. And once it's his property, the idolater, of course, doesn't have a mitzvah of Shabbos. So what is the concern here? The Gemara answers, true, in the particular case of a sale of a beast of labor to an idolater, there's no real inherent problem, but the Rabbanan forbade it, gzeira mishum she'elo mishum schirus. For they made a decree that a Jew shouldn't even sell a beast of labor to idolaters, because if we're allowed to sell them, a Jew might also go ahead and rent out a beast of labor to an idolater, or lend his beast of labor to an idolater. And in that case, we would have a problem, the Gemara is suggesting. But the Gemara asks, why? Even in that case, where the Jew lends his animal or rents his animal to an idolater, what's the problem? Since she'elo kanya ve'agra kanya. If it's a case where he lent the animal to this idolater, well, there the act of borrowing the animal causes the idolatrous borrower to acquire the animal for the period of the loan. And similarly, by agra, if he's renting the animal, then the Gemara at this point argues that the halacha considers the renter to be the owner of whatever he's renting for the period of the rental. The Gemara is arguing right now that since the borrower or renter has exclusive rights to the use of this property, therefore, halachically, he is considered the owner for the period that he's either borrowing the animal or renting the animal. As such, we still don't understand what the issue is here. Let the idolater have the animal do malacha on Shabbos. It's not a problem at all, because at the time he does that, the animal belongs to him. It doesn't belong to the Jew. So what is the reason for this rabbinic decree? The Gemara therefore suggests a different reason. Elo Amarami Bereder of Yeva. He too explains that it has to do with the concern of that potentially the Shabbos will be desecrated, but here's his specific reason. Gzeira mishum nisiyoni. The Rabbanim made this decree out of concern that if we allow a Jew to sell a beast of labor to an idolater, perhaps the idolater will end up testing the animal when it's already Shabbos in a way that the Shabbos will be violated, as the Gemara will now explain. But the concern is, the zimn and the zavna law nihalei samach lishkiya sacham and the mali shabsa. It might occur that a Jew is finalizing a sale of this beast of burden just before sundown on Friday, just before the beginning of Shabbos, and Yomrele, the buyer, this idolater, might ask the Jewish seller, Tan Nasiyon Yale, come, let's test this animal that you wish to sell me. Let's see if it can carry the burden, let's say. Shamale Lekale Vyazla Machmase. And at the Jewish owner's command, it will, recognizing its master's voice, go at that command, Vinichale de Tezel. And the Jewish seller will be pleased with this because it will demonstrate that the animal is capable. And it's possible that will end up happening when it's already Shabbos. And so this will be a situation where a Jew has led his animal carrying a burden on Shabbos. In doing so, is a desecration of Shabbos. It makes the person liable to bring a carbon chatas. Rami Berader of Yeva suggests that this was the reason for the Rabbanan's decree against selling these beasts of burden to idolaters. It might end up this situation where to test the animal out, the Jew will willfully command the animal to go with the labor, which would be a desecration of Shabbos. Is a specific negative commandment against this act of having the animal go with the burden on Shabbos. The Gemara now returns to the theory that was suggested earlier. It was suggested the Rabbanan decreed that a Jew cannot sell a beast of burden to an idolater lest he end up renting or lending out a beast of burden to an idolater. The problem with that is that the idolater might then use the animal and have it do malacha on Shabbos. And the Torah says that a Jew may not put his animal in a situation where it's going to do malacha on Shabbos. But the Gemara had rejected this theory. The Gemara asserted that if an idolater rents an animal from a Jew or borrows an animal from a Jew for the period of that rental, or for the time that he's borrowing the animal, the animal is considered to belong to him, so it's still not an issue at all if he has to do malacha on Shabbos. The Gemara now challenges this assertion. Maskeflor of Shisha Bereder of Idi, yes, to Schirus mi Kanya. But is it true that if somebody rents some property, that the renter is considered to be the owner for the period of the rental? The Gemara says, Vatnan, but I will learn in the Mishnah, Chaf Amid Beis. The Mishnah there states a halacha that a Jew may not lease a house to an idolater in Eretz Yisrael. But a Jew, Mishnah there says, may lease a house to an idolater outside of Eretz Yisrael. And the Mishnah there then continues as follows. Af b'makom she'amru lahaschir. Even in a place where the Rabbanan said it's permitted for a Jew to rent his house out to an idolater, lo lebeis dira amru, did not permit the Jew to lease out his house to an idolater for the purpose of residing there. If he's going to live there, that would not be allowed. It's only permitted, let's say, to rent it out for storage. Why can't the Jew lease the house to the idolater for him to live there? Because if the idolater is moving and he's going to live there, he's going to bring his idols into the home. And the Torah says, "V'lo savi toev el beisecha." Do not bring an abomination into your home. And this includes a prohibition against bringing an idol into one's home. So the Gemara points out, "V'isa gedaitach schiras kanya." If what we said above is true, that when you're talking about a rental, for that rental period, the renter is considered the owner of the property. If that's true, why would there be a problem if this idolater brings his idol into this home? Hi, kikomayel, the basic amayel. Hi, this idolater is bringing his idol into his own home. That should not be prohibited. So it seems from the Mishnah. In fact, even in a rental agreement, the landlord is still considered the owner of the property. But the Gemara deflects this proof by saying that, no, really in general, in a rental agreement, the renter is considered the primary owner. And shiny avodas kochavim and the chamira the chsiv elosavi soev al beisecha. It's just that the particular subject of the quoted Mishnah later on Chafim et Beis is dealing with a particularly severe issue of idol worship, where again the Torah says, "Thou shalt not bring an abomination, an idol, into your house." So, due to the severity of the sin of avodah zarah, regarding that sin, we do consider the property to still be in the possession of the landlord, even for the duration of the rental. And so we can't have this situation where the idolatrous renter is going to bring an idol into his home. But in general, we could say the renter is considered the real owner for the rental period. But again, the Gemara questions this. Maskev lor of Yitzchak Bereder of Misharshia. He questioned, Uschiros mikanya. Does the rental cause the renter to acquire the property for the period of the rental? But I v'otnan. There is a Mishnah in Masechtas Trumos that indicates not so. It says the Mishnah there, halacha is Yisrael shesachar para me kohen. If a Yisrael, not a kohen, rented a cow from a kohen, yachilena karshine truma. The Yisrael renter may feed the cow truma food, truma animal food. And conversely, the kohen shesachar para me Yisrael. If a kohen rented a cow from a Yisrael, a non kohen, says the Mishnah, the halacha is afal pi shemizona seha alav. Even though the obligation to feed this animal that he's renting is upon the renter, the kohen in this case, nevertheless, lo yachilena karshine truma. He may not feed this animal truma food. For the halacha is only an animal that is owned by a kohen may eat truma, the portion that is set aside only for the Kohanim. And so the Gemara points out, V'isak edaitach schirus kanya. If it's really true that rental causes the renter to acquire the property for the period of the rental, well then, amaya lo yachilana. Let's say in the second case here, why can't the Kohen feed this animal he's rented truma food? Paradi dehi, seeing as how the cow for the rental period is considered his property. So what's the issue? Why can't he feed it truma food? Elish maminas chiras lokanya. So we learn from this Mishnah, apparently the renter does not acquire the property. He's not considered the owner of the property. No. The actual owner, the one who rented out the property of the animal, remains the owner even throughout the rental period. And so the Gemara says, V'hashta diyamart schirus lokanya. Now that you're saying, now that we've come to the conclusion, that actually the renter is not considered the owner through the rental period, and in the case where he borrows the animal, the same thing, even though he has full rights to use the animal, that's not tantamount to being the primary owner of the animal. We may now revert back to the original explanation of this rabbinic decree, namely, why did the Rabbanan say a Jew may not sell a beast of burden to an idolater? Gzeira mishum schiras, gzeira mishum sheila. They said this as a decree lest the Jew come to rent out the animal to an idolater or lend it to an idolater, and then the idolater may very well have this animal do malacha on Shabbos, and the animal this time is still considered the property of the Yisrael. So that would be a prohibition on the Yisrael's part. Therefore, the Rabbanan, as a preventative measure, outlawed even selling a beast of burden to an idolater. And the Gemara merges this explanation with the other explanation that was suggested, Gezer Mishim Nisyoni, that is, there's also a concern here, that if we allow a Jew to sell an idolater a beast of burden, he might do a sale just before Shabbos and end up violating Shabbos as explained above. The Gemara now relates, Rav Ada Shara Lezavuni Chamara Ayida the Safsira. Rav Ada allowed a Jew to sell a donkey to an idolater through a broker, even though the broker himself was Jewish. Nevertheless, Rav Ada said that through a third party, it's permitted. The Gemara explains why. Imishim Nisyoni, for regarding the concern that maybe they'll end up testing out the animal just before Shabbos, the animal will go at its owner's command. Well, that's not an issue here for Halo Yada Lekale. This donkey does not recognize the voice of the broker, the Azlam Achmasi, that would cause it to go because of his command. So that isn't an issue here. V'yimishim she'elav schiras. And as far as the concern that if we allow the sale of this animal, maybe he'll end up renting out or lending the animal instead, which could then easily lead to prohibition as explained above. The Gemara says that concern doesn't apply here either. For kivin delo didehi, since this donkey doesn't belong to the broker here, lo moshel velo mogar, can be rest assured that he's not going to just go and lend out the animal or rent out the animal, for that's not his job. His job is just one objective, get the animal sold. So that's what he's going to do. He's not going to do one of these other type of transactions. The Gemara adds, viod, in addition, there's actually a specific reason why he would not want to rent or lend out the animal. Mishum delo negali be muma. The truth is, the broker doesn't want to give a potential buyer too much time to use the animal to rent it out or borrow it, for it's not in the broker's interest for the buyer to discover maybe some imperfections with the product, with this donkey. Rather, the broker will be interested in doing only one thing, which is get the animal sold as quickly as possible. Therefore, in this case, Rav Ada permitted the sale. The Gemara relates another actual case. Rav Huna zavenahi para liyovikochavim. Rav Huna once sold a cow to an idolater without using a broker. He just sold it to him directly. So Amalei Rav Chista questioned Rav Huna, Maitam Avid Marachi. Why did Mar do this? Why was this allowed? Amalei, Rav Huna answered, Eimor l'shchita zavna. Rav Huna explained that he allowed himself to be lenient here. So he said, we have a right to assume that this buyer will slaughter the animal. He's buying it simply to eat the animal, to slaughter it, and eat the meat. If we knew, we had no reason to believe that the idolater was not going to buy it just to slaughter it, rather, you know, to have it around for an extended period, to have it work for him, then certainly the prohibition would apply, because people would see that this idolater has an animal that he purchased from a Jew, and that would lead them to believe that, oh, we're allowed to do any business transactions with the beasts of burden, with idolaters, and so they'll end up renting or lending beasts of burden to idolaters. And then you have the problem as explained above. But Rav Huna argues, as long as there's no specific reason to believe that he's purchasing it to use as a beast of burden, then we're allowed to be talinan, we could hang it on, attribute it to, we could assume, in other words, that he's purchasing it to slaughter it. So if he's going to slaughter it, it won't be around very long at all, and no one will get the impression that you're allowed to do any transaction with a beast of burden with an idolater. According to Rav Huna, then, the Mishnah has to be referring to a case where there's reason to believe that the idolater is not purchasing this to slaughter it. Let's say he's buying a horse, which is not, you know, normally slaughtered for food. Or he specifically said, you know, he clearly is interested in buying it to use for labor. The Mishnah is saying only in that kind of case that there's a prohibition. Turning that to Amud Beis, the Gemara asks, Uminat Timra the Amrinan Kai Gavna. What is the source for such a concept that we can be lenient when there is at least a plausible basis to assume that the outcome will not be the problematic type of outcome, that we're then allowed to make that assumption and permit it? From where do we see that we can say such a thing? The Gemara answers, it's not. We have a source for this in the following Mishnah in Masechta Shavuos, in which Beis Shammai says, Lo yimchor adam para hachoreshes b'shvias. One may not sell a cow that is fit for plowing during the Shemitah year to a Jew who we suspect doesn't observe the laws of Shemitah, you know, to refrain from farming in Shemitah. Because that's putting a stumbling block before this person. It's enabling this person to violate the laws of Shemitah. He's going to go and plow with it during Shemitah. Therefore, the seller is forbidden from selling it to him. However, Beis Hillel matirin. Beis Hillel permits this. He says it's fine, you can sell him the cow, even though it is possible to use the cow for plowing. Because plowing is not the only purpose a person would purchase the cow. Maybe he's purchasing it to slaughter it. And of course, the halacha always follows the opinion of Beis Hillel. And so seemingly we can learn from this Mishnah a general principle that as long as there's an alternative explanation, an alternative possibility, according to which a person is not, you know, setting up a prohibited situation, then it's permitted. But the Gemara questions the analogy. Amar Rabbo, Rabbi said, "Mi dami." But are the two cases comparable? Rabbi says, "No." Hasam eina the mitzuval shvisas behemto b'shvias. There in that Mishnah in Shvias, the fact is that a person does not have the commandment to make sure that his animal rests from doing malacha during Shemitah. That's not the issue there. Rather, the issue there is the potential problem of placing a stumbling block before this person. So in that context, Basil is saying that since the buyer is not necessarily purchasing it to do a sin, to stumble and, you know, farm with it during Shemitah, it is therefore not a problem for the seller to sell the animal to him. As opposed to Hacha, the issue we're dealing with here, where a Jew wants to sell an animal to an idolater, here, Adam Mitzuval Shvisas Behemta B'Shabbos. Here we have a very different kind of problem, which is that the seller has a personal obligation to ensure that as long as the animal still belongs to him, he can't be putting the animal in a situation where it's going to be doing malacha on Shabbos. Because of that concern, the Rabbanan said, not only may Jew not rent or lend his beast of burden to an idolater, he may not even sell the beast of burden to an idolater, lest one thing lead to another. People might think that renting and lending the animal is also fine. So the Gemara says, maybe when it comes to this type of problem, we have no right to assume, as Rav Huna suggested above, that it won't be a problem. Maybe he's just buying it to slaughter it. Who says we can make that assumption to deal with this type of problem? Gemara responds, are you suggesting then that when it's a question of, you know, this person has a personal obligation, that, you know, his property, for example, can't do malach on Shabbos, you're telling me when that's the kind of problem we're dealing with, we can't permit it on the basis of assuming that he's not going to be keeping it for labor, he's going to be slaughtering it? You're telling me we cannot rely on that assumption? When Abaye points out, Vahare Sada, behold, Let's talk about the case of field during the Shemitah year. Now, comes to a person's field, Adam mitzvah shviyasa sadeh b'shviyas. A person does have a personal obligation that his field be at rest, you know, not be farmed during the Shemitah year. And the next word is changed from utznan to v'tanya, because it's a brisa. Yet it says in a brisa the following, b'sham yomrim lo yimchar adam sdeh nir b'shviyas. Person is not allowed to sell his plowed field to another Jew during the Shemitah year. Assuming that we suspect that Jew is not careful with the laws of Shemitah, this is a problem of placing a stumbling block before this person, because he might go ahead and use the field to farm during Shemitah. However, Ubeis Hillel Matirin Mipnish Yachal Elvira. Ubeis Hillel permits this because it's possible that the Jewish buyer will not actually go ahead and plow and farm the field this year during Shemitah. Maybe he'll leave it fallow this year and only get to it after Shemitah, so it's permitted. So this situation is analogous to our case. This is a situation where if we allow the sale of this plowed field during Shemitah, this Jew might end up leasing his plowed field to another Jew during Shemitah, and then you could have a real problem, for if the non-observant Jewish buyer farms that field during Shemitah, that will be considered a sin on the Jewish landlord's part because his field is not resting during Shemitah. And yet the Rabbanan apparently did not say, according to Beis Hillel, and we paskel like Beis Hillel, the Rabbanan did not say that because of this concern, we cannot allow the sale of a plowed field to this other Jewish person. Rather, we see that apparently the Rabbanan allow us to make an assumption. If it's not, you know, there's no particular indication that he plans on farming the field, then the Jew can sell him the field on the assumption that he'll let it lie fallow until next year. And so this would lend support for Rav Huna's lenient ruling above. That he similarly says that he allowed himself to go and sell the beast of burden to the idolater because it was the kind of animal that he might just shecht to eat. And Rav Huna argued you're allowed to make that assumption. The Gemara now questions the other point that Rabba stated above. Rabba seemed to explain that the way the system works is it all depends on whether you're dealing with a case where the seller has a personal obligation vis-a-vis the property that he's selling, that property cannot be worked or cannot do work. If yes, then it's a problem. If not, then it's not a problem. The Gemara questions one side of this rule. But is it true what Rabbi said, that as long as the seller does not have a personal obligation vis-a-vis the property, that there be no work done with that property, then it's not a problem? You can go ahead and sell it and assume that it won't, cause a stumbling block. But Rav Ashi asks, V'hare Kalim, but behold, let's consider the case of farming tools. Eina the mitzvah shvisas kalim b'shvias. A person does not have a personal obligation that his farming tools can't be used for farming during Shemitah. There's no such halacha. And yet, Tutnan says in the Mishnah in Shvias, Eilu hein kalim she'eina the mreshai lemochem b'shvias. Person may not sell the following farming tools during the Shemitah year, says the Mishnah, HaMachareisha V'chol Keilea. The plow and all accessories that go along with a plow, all, and the yoke, via mizra, shovel that was used for winnowing the grain, via deker, the hoe. Shenshviya says none of these things may be sold to a person who we suspect does not observe the laws of Shemitah. Can't sell these things during the Shemitah year. Even though, again, you don't have the particular problem that there's an obligation on a person that his property, his tools can't be used to farm during Shemitah. There's no such halacha. And so you can't say, well, the issue is maybe we'll end up renting them out. And then we'd have this non-observant person using them to farm. And that would be a prohibition on the part of the person who rented them out. You don't have that concern. Rather, the concern here is strictly the issue of placing a stumbling block before this person. And yet, that problem is enough to forbid the sale of these items. So this seems to call into question Rabba's statement that the key determining factor is whether it's a situation where the seller has a personal obligation vis-a-vis the property that it not be used for work. So therefore, because of this proof, Elam Ravashi, rather Ravashi says, that really this is how it works. The guiding principle as far as all these kind of situations where the issue is, can I sell this person? Maybe I'll end up using it for a prohibition. This is the rule. Kol hecha de'ika limitla talina. If there is a very clear basis, a realistic assumption upon which we can rely and say that, who says he's buying it for a prohibited purpose? then we will rely on that assumption and we will permit the sale of whatever the item is. Even if it's a situation where the seller has this personal obligation that this property can't be used for the illicit purpose in question. And therefore, if it's a case where, let's say, he's selling a cow to an idolater, the Jew may assume that he's buying it to slaughter. And if he's selling a plowed field during Shemitah, he's allowed to assume that, you know, who says he's farming this year? It's very reasonable to assume that maybe he'll only farm next year. Whereas, v'kol heicha d'leka limitli, if there's no clear-cut assumption upon which we can rely, lo talina, we will not rely on that assumption. And that is true, afagav de'ena mitzuva. Even if it's not a case where you have the particular issue that he, the seller, has a personal obligation that for his property not to be used for the illicit purpose, even when it's only the question of not placing a stumbling block before another, if the assumption we want to rely on is like a flimsy assumption, then we don't rely on it. Which is why we can't rely on any assumption in the case of the farming tools. This notion that, oh, maybe he's not going to use it right away is a far-fetched one. There's a much stronger likelihood he's going to be using it soon during the Shemitah year. So that's why in that case, the Jewish seller can't sell to this, you know, non-observant Jewish buyer because it's placing a stumbling block before a blind person. The Gemara tells us a related case. Rabba Zavinahu Chamaral Yisrael Achashid Limcha Liovid Kochavim. Once, Rabba sold a donkey to a Jew who was chashid, was suspect of being a person who would turn around and illegally sell this beast of burden, this donkey, to an idolater. Amrli Abaye, Abaye questioned Rabba about this. My time of Namar Hachi. Why did Mar do this? Why was this allowed? Amrli, Rabba answered, Anol Yisrael Zavini. He said, what's the problem? I sold a donkey to a Jew. That's not prohibited. Amrli Abaye said back to Rabba, but no, it is a problem here. For Ozil Mazavin Leili Ovid Kochavim. This Jewish buyer is, you know, likely to turn around and sell the donkey illegally to an idolater. And so, as Tosus explains here, this would be a problem for Rabba because it would turn out that he put a stumbling block before another Jew for him to violate the rabbinic decree against selling an animal to an idolater. To this, Rabba responded, Oved kochavim kamezavin liYisrael lo kamezavin? Are you suggesting that the Jewish buyer will necessarily sell the animal to an idolater? He's not going to sell to Yisrael. Why do we have to make such an assumption? It's entirely possible that this Jewish buyer will simply sell the donkey to another Jew. So I can make that assumption, and therefore it was not a problem here that I sold this donkey to a Jew, even though possibly he'll sell it to an idolater. The Gemara challenges Rabba Eisfei. Yes, the Rabba from the following Raisa, which says, Makum shenogu limchar behemadaka lekusim mochrin. If the local custom is to permit the sale of small animals to the Kusim people, these were a sect of people that were imported to Eretz Yisrael in Melachim Beis by Ashur, and they underwent a questionable conversion. There's a dispute whether their conversion was halachically valid. Anyway, the Braisa says, if the local custom is to allow the sale of smaller animals to the Kusi people, then mochrit, then we can sell them to them, shelo limchar. But if the custom is not to sell small animals to the Kusi people, then ain mochrin, then they can't be sold to the Kusi people. We must abide by that local custom. The Gemara, developing its question, first asks, my taima, what is the reason that at least in some places there is a custom to be stringent not to sell small animals to Kusim? The Gemara says, Ilema mishum de chashidi aravia, if you say the reason is, because it just like we said about the idolaters, the Kusim as well, are suspect about the sin of bestiality. And so the issue is that it's potentially placing a stumbling block for this Kusi person that'll go into a sin of bestiality with the animal. The Gemara says, Umi chashidim, is this true? Or the Kusim suspect in the area of bestiality, but I, Vilhatanya, says in a Braisa, Halacha is, Ein mamidin behema befundaka shalov de kochavim. A Jew may not stable his animal in the inn of an idolater. Even Zacharim etzel Zacharim and a kevos etzel the kevos. Even if the animal and the idolater are of the same gender, Yain tzarech lomar and a kevos etzel Zacharim and Zacharim etzel the kevos, and needless to say, that if they're of the opposite gender, there's even more of a concern that a sin of bestiality will happen. It's placing a stumbling block before the idolater, so you can't stable the animal with him. The Braisa continues, V'ein mosrin behema l'rova shalahen. We're not allowed to leave an animal with an idolater who is a shepherd. If For again, maybe he'll cause him, he'll enable him to do the sin of bestiality. We're not allowed to be in seclusion with them, with an idolater, because these pagans were suspect with regards to murder. They would commit murder often. Therefore, Allah, you know, doesn't allow a person to put himself in danger, so you can't be in seclusion with one of these idolaters. And don't leave a young child with them. To teach him a trade or teach him some knowledge, because that's dangerous to the child, both physically and spiritually. Raisa continues, Avol mamidin behema befundaka shel kusim. But there's no problem to stable an animal by the inn. It belongs to a kusi. And that's even zacharim etzel nekevus, and nekevitz etzel zacharim. Even if the animal is of a different gender than the kusi innkeeper, and zacharim zacharim etzel nezacharim, and nekevitz etzel nekevus, and goes without saying then that if they're of the same gender, that there's no concern. And in addition, Mosrin Behema L'Roshalan, so it's also fine to entrust a Kusi shepherd with an animal. And in Misyachadin Mahem, one may remain in seclusion with a Kusi person. We don't suspect them of murder. Mosrin Lam Tinok, and we can give even a child over to them for training, Lam Dosefer, Lam Domanus, to learn some knowledge or some trade. So the Gemara points out, clearly from the Braisa, Alma Lo Chashidi. Clearly, we do not suspect that the Kusi people engage in the sin of bestiality. The question, therefore, is, on the earlier Braisa, why does the Braisa state that there was a problem to sell these small animals to the Kusim? At least in some places, there's a custom to be stringent, just like we said by idolaters. But why? We're not concerned that they will engage in bestiality. Apparently, the reason is because if a Jew sells animal to a Kusi, he may then turn around and sell that animal to an idolater, where we do have a problem, let's say a bestiality. So this appears to refute Rabba's ruling that he allowed himself to sell an animal to a Jewish buyer, even though there was a possibility that a Jewish buyer would turn around and violate the halacha and sell it to an idolater. Rabba said, no, we can assume that maybe he'll sell it to a Jew. Apparently, we don't make that assumption. Let's say in the Kusi case, we don't say that, the Kusi, maybe we'll just sell it to a Jew. You see, we don't say that, so it appears to refute Rabba. And the Gemara points out further, V'yod Tanya. Furthermore, we have the following Braisa. The Braisa says, Ein mochin lohem lo zayin velo klei zayin. We not sell weapons or accessories to weapons to idolaters. They might use these dangerous weapons against us. V'ein mashchizin len es hazayin, nor may we sharpen weapons for them. V'ein mochin len lo sadan velo kolorin velo kivolim velo shashalush or barzel. We also can't sell different types of locks and chains, things that might use for evil purposes, and particularly against us. And says the Braisa, Echad ovekochavim v'yechad kusi. We may not sell these things neither to an idolater nor to a kusi. So again, the question is, my taima. Why can't we sell these things to a kusi person? If you'll say, because just like the of the kochavim, the kusiim also suspected of murder, they might use the weapons for evil to murder innocent people. But the Gemara points out, but is that true? Do we suspect them of this? But we said above, the Braisa said that there's no halachic problem being in seclusion with a kusi person. We're not afraid. We don't suspect that they're like barbaric. They're going to go and kill an innocent person. So that can't be the reason. Sell it, rather, must be. Once again, this shows us that the Rabbanu were concerned that the Kusi might act as a middleman. He might then turn around and sell the weapons to an idolater, and then it'll be a problem. So once again, we see that we can't make the lenient assumption that Rabbah made, that that's fine, because who says he'll sell it to an idolater? No, we see that we must be concerned that he'll then sell it to an idolater. The Gemara suggests and then rejects a possible defense of Rabbah. The Gemara says, V'chitim, if you're going to say that there's a difference here, that you're bringing a proof against Rabbah from a case where the middleman is a kusi, so you'll say, kusi lo avet tshuva. A kusi person is not likely to repent and ultimately do the right thing and not, you know, put this weapon or the animal in the hands of the wrong person, of an idolater. Whereas Yisrael avet tshuva. When you're dealing with a Jewish middleman, he might very well do tshuva, he might repent, he might do the right thing and make sure not to sell this to the wrong person, not to, let's say, provide the weapon to an idolater. But the Gemara puts this distinction to rest. For Ve'omer of Nachman Omer Rava Baravua, Rav Nachman, in the name of Rama Ravua, clearly said that Kiderech She'amru Asr Limcha Li'avikachavim, just as we learned above, that the Rabbanan said it's forbidden to sell these different things to an idol. The Torah Ka'ach Asr Limcha Li'Yisrael Achashr Limcha Li'avikachavim. So too the Rabbanan said, a Jew may not sell a problematic item to a Jew who he suspect might resell the item to an idolater. It's very clear from this teaching that, you know, not like Rabbi said, we don't have the right to assume that maybe he won't sell it to an idolater. No, it's not what we say. We say that we have to be stringent about this. And so, you know, since this clearly disproved Rabbi's argument, Gemara tells us, Rahit Basre Klasa Parsi, Rabbi regretting this sale, tempted to get the donkey back, he tried to run after the Jew who purchased the donkey from him for 3 parsa of Ikadarmir. Some say parsa, it was 1 parsa of Bechala. It was all parsa's distance. He ran in sand to try and catch up to this person, Vilajarche, but he ultimately did not catch up to him. Gemara continues, Amar Avdimi Baraba, Kiderach Shi Asr Limchali Ovikachavim, Asr Limchali Listim Yisrael. Just as we said above, that one cannot sell these different weapons to an idolater, one may also not sell any of these things to a Jewish robber. The Gemara analyzes this ruling. Hechidami, what is the case here? The chashid, the katil. If the issue is that we're concerned that the Jewish robber will turn around and use the weapon to go and kill someone, if that is the situation where indeed we assess that this person might commit murder, then pshita. Well, then obviously one may not sell him a weapon, may not provide this person with means to carry out murder. That's exactly the same issue as by an idolater. Of course, why would we make a distinction? So it would be very obvious, it would be superfluous to state such a ruling. On the other hand, if you say that we're not concerned that this Jewish robber will commit murder with the weapon, am I low? Well, then the question is, why can't the weapon be sold to him? The Gemara answers, really, Rav Dimi Baraba deals with the case where this person doesn't have any kind of history. There's no reason to suspect that he'll go and murder somebody in cold blood. But v'achav ma'yaskin, and here what are we dealing with? B'mashmota. We're dealing with like a sneaky kind of a thief. He does things, he operates in secret, and that's how he commits his robberies. And so the concern is, the zimnin, the avilat sule nafshe. Maybe if he's provided with these weapons, if his cover is blown, he's not able to hide, and he's apprehended by somebody, if he has a weapon, then he'll be backed into a corner, he'll go and use it to kill a person. Therefore, the weapon may not be sold to him. The Gemara brings a related brisa. Now, Tan Rabbanan, the Rabbanan taught in a brisa, Ein mochel lahen trisin. You may not sell shields to idolaters, v'yesh omrim mochel lahen trisin. But others say, a different opinion says, we can sell shields to them. The Gemara asks, my time, what is the reason for the first opinion? Why does that opinion say we can't sell a shield to an idolater? If the issue is that they could use it to protect themselves, so that would suggest that we can't sell anything that they could use to protect themselves, well then, it would seem to be a never-ending prohibition. If so, according to that logic, we shouldn't be able to sell them anything, any staples, wheat and barley, anything that could fortify themselves, that also ultimately protects themselves, it sustains them, so that should be prohibited too. And of course, we're not aware of any prohibition that says that it's prohibited to sell anything to idolaters. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rav, Rav said that actually, continuing to test Zayin Amar Aleph, Yefshir, if it were practically feasible, if it was possible to not even sell them the wheat and the barley, which gives them sustenance and does enable them to continue their barbaric actions, Zachinami, then indeed, we would refrain from selling those things. So if we could somehow do that in a way that avoided escalating hostilities between us and them, but presumably that would create further hostilities, and so we don't prohibit selling the wheat and the barley. However, to not sell them a particular product, the shields, that could be accomplished without creating hostilities, and therefore, this opinion says we don't sell them shields. The Gemara brings the Ikad the Armor to those that said a different reason. Treason, I knew time to low. The reason why this opinion says we can't sell them shields is because the Chishalim Zainayu Kotli Begavayu. Because actually, when the regular weapons have been used up on the battlefield, it was not uncommon to use the shields as weapons. They would still be able to kill with the edge of the shield. So the shields are also considered weapons, and therefore they're under the ban of not selling them weapons in general. Assuming that this is the reason, the Gemara now explains what the other opinion argues. The other opinion says Then we could sell them shields. The Chishalim Zainai Omer Arki. This opinion disagrees with the first opinion suggestion that they would often use the shields as weapons if the regular weapons got depleted. And rather, this opinion says that in most cases, if their swords or whatever, you know, the regular weapons were no longer, at that point they would just run away. And so since the shields are not used on offense, they're not defensive weapons, therefore they could be sold to the idolaters. The Gemara now rules, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rava, Amar Ravua, Halacha ki Yeshomrim. Says the halacha is like the Yeshomrim, that it's permitted to sell shields to idolaters. Mar brings a related ruling. Amar Rav Ada bar Ava, Ein mochel lehen ashashios shel barzel. We're not allowed to sell big pieces of iron to idolaters. Ma'itam, what's the reason? Mishum dechalshi minayu klei zayin. Because this is providing material that they could use, they can reshape it into weapons. Therefore, it can't be sold to them. Gemara wonders, Yachi, if so, according to that logic, afilu mari v'chatzinei nami, then we shouldn't be able to sell them many things, like different farming tools, a hoe or nads. These things, too, theoretically could be reshaped into weapons, so that should be prohibited, too. The Gemara answers, Amrav Zvid, v'parzala hindua. The prohibition stated specifically regarding pieces of Indian iron, a very strong type of iron that was used only, exclusively for weapons. So the prohibition states that a material that's exclusively used to manufacture weapons can't be sold to the idolaters, which of course is not the case regarding the, you know, typical metal used for your general, your farming tools. The Gemara notes, via idna de kumas avnin. What about nowadays? By the time of the Gemara, they permitted the sale of weapons to the idolatrous, you know, ruling nation, which was Persia. So why is that permitted? I thought our Gemara is saying it's not allowed. Amar Rav Ashi, Rav Ashi said, the answer is, yes, we allow the sale of weapons, le parsai, to the current ruling pagan nation, the Persians, the Meganu Ilavan, for they defend us. They don't use the weapons to attack us. The opposite, they use it to defend us. So in that situation, it's permitted to sell them weapons.
Been listening to realclearedaf.com. Visit us online for resources or to dedicate a shiur. To speak with Rabbi Wise, call 855-ASK-RCD1. That's 855-275-7231.